The Fault in Our Stars by John Green, a New York Times bestseller. And at the beginning of the book, it says this from another book. As the tide washed in, the Dutch tulip man faced the ocean. Oh, it's just a quotation they give at the beginning of the book. As the tide washed in, the Dutch tulip man faced the ocean. Conjoiner, rejoinder. Poisoner, concealer, revelator. Look at it, rising up and rising down, taking everything with it. What's that, I asked. Water, the Dutchman said. Well and time. That's by Peter van Houten. An Imperial Affliction. Don't know what that has to do with. Right. Oh, the author says at the beginning, this is a work of fiction. I made it up. Okay. The Fault in Our Stars, Chapter 1. Late in the morning of my 17th
year. Don't tell me that you're recording.
I am. Does it make a difference? Would you prefer me not to?
I would, as always, but fine.
No, I'll stop if you like.
No, just keep going. I couldn't be bothered to make you stop.
No, but you have it.
You've already done it before.
No, I can turn it off.
No,
I can stop recording.
Keep doing it.
Okay. But you do have control and power and everything, right?
I have to get something.
Okay, I'm going to carry on reading.
Okay.
Late in the winter of my 17th year, my mother decided I was depressed, presumably because I rarely left the house, spent quite a lot of time in bed, read the same book over and over, ate infrequently, and devoted quite a bit of my abundant free time to thinking about death. Whenever you read a cancer booklet or website or whatever, they always list depression among the side effects of cancer. But in fact, depression is not a side effect of cancer. Depression is a side effect of dying. Cancer is also a side effect of dying. Almost everything is, really.
Read your book, isn't.
But my mum believed I required treatment, so she took me to see my regular doctor, Jim, who agreed that I was veritably swimming in a paralysing and totally clinical depression, and that therefore my meds should be adjusted, and also I should attend a weekly support group. This support group featured a rotating cast of characters in various states of tumour-driven unwellness. Why did the cast rotate? A side effect of dying. The support group, of course, was depressed as hell. It met every Wednesday in the basement of a stone-walled Episcopalian church shaped like a cross. We all sat in a circle right in the middle of the cross, where the two boards would have met, where the heart of Jesus would have been. I noticed this because Patrick, the support club leader and only person over 18 in the room, talked about the heart of Jesus every freaking meeting. All about how we, as young cancer survivors, were sitting right in Christ's very sacred heart and whatever. So here's how it went in Christ's heart. The 6 or 7 or 10 of us walked, wheeled in, gazed at a decrepit selection of cookies and lemonade, sat down in the circle of trust and listened to Patrick recount for the 1,000th time his depressingly miserable life story, how he had cancer in his balls and they thought he was going to die, but he didn't die, and now here he is, a full-grown adult in a church basement in the 137th nicest city in America. Divorced, addicted to video games, almost friendless, eking out a meagre living by exploiting his cancertastic past, slowly working his way towards a master's degree that will not improve his career prospects, waiting, as we all do, for the sword of Damocles to give him the relief that he escaped, lo, these many years ago, when cancer took both of his nuts, but spared what only the most generous soul might call his life. What do you think so far?
get it. Like, no, I've read that bit, but I don't get, like, I don't know.
Will I carry on, or?
Yeah, no, keep carrying on.
Okay. And you too might be so lucky. Then we introduced ourselves. Name, age, diagnosis, and how we're doing today. I'm Hazel. I'd say when they'd get to me. 16. Thyroid originally, but with an impressive and long settled satellite colony in my lungs, and I'm doing okay. Once we got around the circle, Patrick always asked if anyone wanted to share, and then began the circle jerk of support. Everyone talking about fighting and battling and winning and shrinking and scanning. To be fair to Patrick, he let us talk about dying too. But most of them weren't dying. Most would live into adulthood, as Patrick had. Which meant there was quite a lot of competitiveness about it, with everybody wanting to beat not only cancer itself, but also the other people in the room. Like, I realise that this is irrational, but when they told you that you have, say, a 20% chance of living 5 years, the maths kicks in and you figure that's 1 in 5. So you look around and think, as any healthy person would, I'm gonna outlast 4 of these bastards. The only redeeming facet of support group was this kid named Isaac, a long-faced, skinny guy with straight blonde hair swept over one eye. And his eyes were the problem. He had some fantastically improbable eye cancer. Do you want to hear the rest of this? Are you sure? As soon as you want me to stop, you shout or yell or anything, right? I don't want you having a bit of a bad night, okay? Couldn't we read something like, once upon a time, there was a lovely girl who had two...
Oh my God, Dad, stop.
Okay, shall I get another book?
I want to read this.
Okay. One eye had been cut out when he was a kid, and now he wore the kind of thick glasses that made his eyes, both the real one and the glass one, preternaturally huge, like his whole head was basically just this fake eye and this real eye staring at you. From what I could gather on the rare occasions when Isaac shared with the group, a recurrence had placed his remaining eye in mortal peril. Isaac and I communicated almost exclusively through sighs. Each time somebody discussed anti-cancer diets or snorting ground up shark fin or whatever, he'd glance over at me and sigh ever so slightly. I'd shake my head microscopically and exhale in response. So, support group blew, and after a few weeks I grew to be rather kicking and screaming about the whole affair. In fact, on the Wednesday I made the acquaintance of Augustus Waters. I tried my level best to get out of support group while sitting on the couch with my mum in the third leg of a 12-hour marathon of the previous season's America's Next Top Model, which admittedly I'd already seen, but still. Me, I refused to attend support group. Mum, one of the symptoms of depression is disinterest in activities. Me, please just let me watch America's Next Top Model. It's an activity. Mum, television is a passivity. Me, Mom, please. Mom, Hazel, you're a teenager. You're not a little kid anymore. You need to make friends. Get out of the house and live your life. Me, if you want me to be a teenager, don't send me to support group. Buy me a fake ID so I can go to clubs, drink vodka and take pot. Mom, you don't take pot for starters.
What's pot?
Drugs.
Ugh.
Me, see, that's the kind of thing I'd know if you got me a fake ID. Mom, you're going to a support group. Me, ugh. Mom, Hazel, you deserve a life. That shut me up, although I failed to see how attendance at support group meant the definition of life. Still, I agreed to go. After negotiating the right to record the 1.5 episodes of ANTM. You know what that is?
America's Next Top Model.
Wow. I'd be missing. Have you ever seen it? I went to support group for the same reason that I'd once allowed nurses with the mere 18 months of graduate education to poison me with exotically named chemicals. I wanted to make my parents happy. There was only one thing in this world shittier than biting it from cancer when you're 16, and that's having a kid who bites it from cancer. Mom pulled into the circular driveway behind the church at 4:56. I pretended to fiddle with my oxygen mask for a second time just to kill time. "Do you want me to carry it in for you?" "No, it's fine," I said. The cylindrical green tank only weighed a few pounds, and I had this little steel cart to wheel it around behind me. It delivered 2 litres of oxygen to me each minute through a cannula, a transparent tube that split just beneath my neck, wrapped behind my ears, and then reunited in my nostrils. The contraption was necessary because my lungs sucked at being lungs. "I love you," she said as I got out. "You too, Mom. See you at 6. Make friends," she said through the rolled down window as I walked away. I didn't want to take the elevator, because taking the elevator is a last days kind of activity at support group, so I took the stairs. I grabbed a cookie and poured some lemonade into a Dixie cup and then turned around. A boy was staring at me. I was quite sure I'd never seen him before. Long and leanly muscular, he dwarfed the moulded plastic elementary school chair he was sitting in. Yeah? Enough? Okay. Yep. Yeah.
My own book.
You want to read your own book, okay? Right. Crash. Just dropped
Dad,
your. Yeah.
Dad, hold on. I don't really like that book, but the reason why I read it was because I couldn't understand most of the words.
Oh, and did you want to just pick up a few new words?
Yeah, no, I just skipped over them.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get the story properly now. But now that someone else is reading it to me, I don't really like it as
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah.